All right, so I hope the previous segment got recorded, but now it should work. Let me double check. All right, cool. So as you can tell, these meetings are being automatically recorded and automatically transcribed. We will publish the meeting minutes in the next few days. Now we use GC Chat to queue the speakers. You can type in Q+ to add yourself to the queue or Q- to remove. You can type in Q? To see who is in the queue. And then we also have an automatic video recording as well. But right now we haven't had the chance to add those links into the automatic like email sent, right, to the meeting minutes. So I'll do it manually in the weekly meeting, agenda meetings that I've done, right, every week in the past year. All right, next, just introductions and reintroductions. If you're new to the community or you want to re-engage with the community, please feel free to just unmute and introduce yourself. Benjamin, please.
Hi, yeah, this is less of an introduction, but I'm Benjamin Young. I work for Digital Bazaar. I do have a pending PR that adds the video archive link to the emails that go out after this. If someone would like to review it, I'll paste it in chat.
Thank you. Thank you, Benjamin.
No worries.
All right. Any other introductions or reintroductions? All right, next, any announcements or reminders? Kalia, please. Oh, sorry. Anyone else? Any other?
No, I have to unmute myself, sorry. Okay. I just wanted to share that we have a new regional events page up on IIW site, just to support information about the regional events. I don't know if it's been updated yet, but the Africa event is actually shifted to probably being in early September. It hasn't been updated on the website yet, and hopefully will be in the next week or so. We have the Digital Identity Unconference Europe in June, and we'll probably be doing the APAC Digital Identity Unconference in late November, early December next year. And registration for Global IIW, as it were, in April is going to open before Christmas. So if you're keen to get an early bird ticket, look out for our super early bird ticket. Look out for that. That's all. Thanks.
Cool. Sounds good. Thanks, Kalia. Any other announcements or reminders? A quick announcement. I guess we did that last week, but Will has joined us as the co-chair of the CCG. Just want to welcome him again, and he will be helping out with a lot of stuff along with myself and Kimberly as well. So just want to say a big thanks to Will for stepping up. Also, a quick announcement. So the next 2 weeks, as customary, we don't have a CCG meeting on the December 19th and 26th. We'll resume on January 2nd with a presentation by Dimitri on credentials rendering. So that'll be quite exciting. And then we'll have an exciting speaker lineup next year as well. So please continue to hop on and actually also take the time to invite your friends and acquaintances to join us as well. All right, any other announcements or reminders? All right, any updates on the work items? Cool. So let's jump to the main agenda. So today we're very, very glad to have Andrew Hughes, who has been with the community for a long time. And I would consider him as an expert in the ISO mobile driver license standards. Very, very glad to have him here to talk about what's new and what's the latest updates in the MPL standards. So Andrew, the floor is yours.
Great. Thanks, Harrison. Happy to be here. It's been a while since I've been with the CCG. Good to see things are thriving here. So quick introduction for those of you that don't know me. I'm Andrew Hughes, obviously. I've been in the identity management user-centric identity side of the identity management world for quite a while now, probably started somewhere around 2007, and have tried to dive deep as much as I can into the new world of verifiable credentials and decentralized. Since over the last 4 years, I guess, I was at IDEMIA and then Ping Identity, 2 years each, working on basically the mobile ID product and interfacing to the standards community for those products, particularly with the ISO mobile driver's license standards. And I've been giving an update to various groups, really just a high level sort of where are we at for the ISO MDL, because it's not always obvious where the committee is at. So I'm glad to do this now. For those of you that don't know, I recently joined FaceTech. In November, I decided that I would strike out and try to address the big unsolved problem with digital credentials, which is the binding of the human to the digital credential, by which we generally mean biometrics and liveness detection. And that's what FaceTech does. So I've joined a new set of ISO committees, which I hope is going to go well, on biometrics. So with that, enough of that. Let's get into today's presentation. So I'm happy to take questions at any time. I'm not getting into any deep technical discussions on this. But looking forward to, any questions or discussion, as we go. I'll let you guys manage the queue because I'm not watching the chat. So I'm going to do a quick overview of what's happened up to now and then take a deeper dive into 18.13.7, which is MDL presentation over the internet, which is where the action's happening. Just want to put a couple of slides in here about ISO, the International Organization for Standardization. I think that it's hard to grasp what ISO is to the world. It isn't just IT standards. ISO is Global Standards for Trusted Goods and Services. You can find all this material on ISO.org. It's over 75 years old, and it's actually published over 25,000 international standards. So the IT part of ISO is a tiny slice. And all of it is in this Joint Technical Committee 1. So back in 1987, the IEC, the International Electrotechnical, whatever the C was, consortium maybe, and ISO discovered that they were doing a lot of overlap in the technology and information technology standards. So they decided to create this joint technical committee and then put all of the ICT, the Information Communication Technology Standards, within JTC1. The ISO that most of you know is actually JTC1. So all of our well-known standards like ISO 27000 series for information security, 9000 for quality management, 14000 for environmental management. Actually, no, not 14000 and not 9000, sorry, 27000 are JTC1. Also, all of the MDL work in Subcommittee 17 is in JTC1. So, long history, It's a big organization when you look at it as a whole. And, you know, it evolves from time to time, as we might all notice. Okay, so enough of that. The MDL projects happen within JTC1 subcommittee, or SC17. And very briefly, in one of the work groups within the subcommittee, there's a set of a project family for the project numbers 23 to 20. And the idea of these standards is to specify generic mobile EID. So to be clear, these generic EID specifications try to cover the ground, from data objects and coding rules, the issuing phase, the operational phase, which we know is presentation and lifecycle management. We cover trust models and confidence levels. So how can you be certain and how do you communicate certainty over the security and trust of devices and credentials that are being communicated? And more recently, part six has started on how to determine trustworthiness of the secure area, which is what we call things like secure element or the enclave, secure enclave, that sort of thing. Secure area is just a generic term for that. What else should I say about these? These are building blocks, really. So at ISO, we have several different kinds of standards. We have some that are more specification style, where the requirements are specified, hopefully, unambiguously and in detail, and you can determine conformance to those requirements directly. We also have these kinds of framework standards or building block standards, like these ones, where all of the options are set out. So, for example, in the operational phase, we talk about presentation of a mobile driver or mobile EID or MDoC over Bluetooth or over TCP/IP in a few different ways or over NFC. And we require implementers to define a profile of the choices they have made coming out of the frameworks. Because there's too many choices in the frameworks by design. So the standards that you know of as ISO 18013 part 5 and soon, hopefully, 18013 part 7, those are actually profiles of mostly part 23220 part 4 and 23220 part 2. So that's where these are going. So you'll see that, I'm not sure there's much more to be said on this. I've spoken about this one for a while, many years, but they're going in parallel. So the main mobile driver's license standard is ISO 18013 part 5. I went back to the project timeline site at ISO, just to get this image, which is teeny tiny, but you'll have the slides afterwards if you care to take a look. ISO has a formal publication process. There's all kinds of reviews and comments and registrations and checks and that sort of thing. These are all the official stages. The first time that the committee tried to start the mobile driver's license spec in 2015 did not quite achieve launch. So the standard that we have published today was actually approved in 2018. And that's where the current work came from. It was published as an international standard in 2021. And as part of the ISO maintenance process, there's a mandatory periodic review 5 years later, so in 2026. But in 2024 and 2025, the committee has to start considering what might happen in 2026. Do we keep the standard as is with no changes? Do we withdraw it? Do we start a revision? That sort of thing. Clearly things have changed since 2021 and before. So there'll be some sort of changes. I can't predict what those changes might be. Now, 18.13.5, as I've described in the past, and many of you know, covers the data structures and data model of a mobile driver's license based on MDoc data structure, the mobile document data structure. And it primarily concerns over-the-air local radio transmission, engagement and transmission of the data structure. Includes various security features, includes selective disclosure, selective release of information, and indicates ways to assert claims as opposed to direct data values. And there's also so-called server retrieval modes, which were added because certain issuing authorities needed them for their scenarios. But most people tend to view it as device over-the-air transmission of a mobile driver's license. Now, there is a point I want to make very clear about this whole family of standards, is that they're not generic driver's license and generic EID standards. These are designed for mobile devices, and that's causing us lots of pain in the ISO committee, which I'll get into. Our life would be so much easier if this was just on, you know, regular operating systems and regular devices. There's a couple of other relevant 18.13 projects, related projects. So part six is test methods, if you want to test for conformity. And then there's also this technical specification under development for registration certificates for vehicles. It turns out that every jurisdiction not only has a different way of doing driver's licenses, they have wildly different concepts of what a registration certificate is supposed to represent. So that's a bit of excitement in that one. One of the things that we've been doing as an ISO committee, or not as an ISO committee, but as people that are involved in the ISO work, is running interoperability test events. There was actually one happening last week, I think, adjacent to the in-person ISO committee meetings in Paris. I wasn't involved in that one. I've been stepping back a little bit as I figure out how my new job role relates to the mobile driver's license world and work. So I'm a little bit out of date on that. But before then, Spruce ID coordinated a fully remote interop test for 18.13.7, which is MDL over the internet. You can see the test event results at that URL, and you'll have the slide decks afterwards. But it was interesting. A lot of, I guess there was a 2-week testing window where reader servers were able to receive MDLs from MDL apps over the internet through two different protocols. And, you know, some stuff was discovered. And the whole idea was to feed the information back into the draft standard just to make sure that everything works as far as we can tell before publication. So let's get into 18.13 part 7, which I call MDL over the internet. So here's the text from the scope statement in the document. So technically 18.13.7 is about add-on functions that add on to what was defined in 18.13.7. But specifically, the only add-on function we added was presentation to a reader over the internet. There were others that were hanging around in previous versions of the scope, but we discovered that the scope was too big and there were too many things to work on simply with over the internet. So we've postponed some of the other things like holder binding, as we know it, connecting the human to the presentation, that sort of thing. That'll come out in later editions in the 18.0.13 series. So what's included? The famous diagram, which if you've been able to see the spec, we're trying to carry this diagram through. 18.0.13.7 is concerned with interface 2 between the MDL app and the MDL reader. In the language of our committee, the reader is the software that engages with an MDL app and does the transmission stuff. The MDL verifier is the entity that operates a reader, often the relying party. So I'm trying to stay with MDL and MDL reader as the entities that are interchanging, so we don't have to deal with operational concerns of a verifier or a holder. And this is really about interface 2, that's engagement and transmission over the internet. Very crucially, we are only dealing with same device. This is where the reader website is rendered on a mobile device browser, and the MDL itself and the app that manages it is present on the same device. We are not doing cross-device. We're not doing things like using a camera to scan a QR code on a laptop or whatever. There are security concerns that are not easily addressed in the cross-device scenario. So we decided to try to focus on something that we could control, which is same device, and wait for the cross-device scenarios in general to be more fully developed before we try to address cross-device. There's enough to do with same device that we're working on. As I mentioned before, there's two protocols defined in 18.0.13.7. The MDoc device retrieval to a website, otherwise known weirdly as the REST API, and also a profile of OpenID for verifiable presentations. So we have those two options within this spec. But it's complicated. Nothing's easy. Another quick note about the direction of initiation of the protocols. In 18.0.13.5, we had this concept of, you know, your device offers engagement data to the reader. So if you imagine if we're using a QR code to establish the secure connection, you display a QR code on your device and present it to a camera on the reader. With 18.0.13.7, it's really reversed. So the idea is that the reader offers the engagement data to the app, and then the secure channel is set up based on that engagement data. We do offer the possibility of transmitting the engagement data in any other way, because it's not always pragmatic or practical or sensible to have the reader directly send engagement data to the app. For example, with OpenAVP, we can use server metadata published at well-known URLs to present engagement data. It does not have to come as a transmission from the reader. And there's many other considerations. Did I use the same title for the slide? I think I might have done that. So the things that carry over from part 5 really are the data structure and data elements models. I think I might have a typo there. I don't know why I said that means. Anyways, so the data structure and data elements come from part 5 and they're reused in part 7 for MDL. The concept of interfaces and many of the security mechanisms that make sense for over the internet. So mechanisms for session encryption, some of the session management stuff that makes sense for TCP/IP and HTTP, and the various rules for readers and MDoc and MDoc app, that sort of thing. The underlying intention is really to transport MDoc format MDLs over the internet, just like Part 5 transports them over BLE, NFC, and Wi-Fi aware. That's where we started. And it, you know, you can think of it as MDL runs into the brick wall of the internet. And we've had to readjust how the committee thinks of MDLs and transmission over the last couple of years as we worked on ISO 13 Part 7. Because mobile devices are different. I'm embarrassed, but not really embarrassed, to say that it took me until maybe a year ago to really, really comprehend that a mobile device is not a super small laptop. Because that's what I kind of thought it was before. It isn't. It doesn't behave the same way. There's lots of constraints. There's lots of things you can't do on a mobile device for good reasons that you are able to do on a Unix or a Windows laptop. And it, unfortunately, causes basically bad assumptions. If you misconstrue what a mobile device is and how apps and OSs work on mobile devices, it's hard to detect when somebody has incorrect assumptions about the operating environment until you come to very specific things like the ability for an app to have any visibility whatsoever into anything else about the device it's running on. Apps can't know about other installed apps, and many of the details about system resources are obscured or hidden or not available to an app. And basically everything runs in a sandbox. There's different kinds of sandboxes, different functions are available in different kinds of sandboxes, but the app doesn't know anything outside of its sandbox and what's offered through it, which makes it kind of hard for one app to talk to another, kind of bottom line. So what this kind of resulted in is some challenges for the ISO work group that really have come to a head in the last year. Things that we more or less most of us thought was reality about mobile devices and mobile apps turned out to be just bad assumptions. So we've had to do some scrambling and readjustment, some rethinking about how some of the stuff was done, and it spawned off some other group in other standards bodies that is heavily related to the ISO work group work. So some of them. So, you know, when we're handing off control from a website to an MDoc app, we really need guarantees that the MDoc app has valid and correct origin information about where the request came from. We use this origin info to pass on to the reader so the reader can confirm that there hasn't been some sort of substitution or misdirection. Unfortunately, the availability of secured, verified, true origin info just varies on different mobile browsers and different OSs. So we can't get guarantees that every single instance of an MDoc app will be able to know the origin of the request, which is problematic because we would like to use that for detection of interception and misdirection, that sort of thing. We've discovered that some of the typical methods that you would see out in the wild for invocation of a native app on a mobile device, they just don't work for what we need to do with MDoc and MDLs. So custom URL schemes or claimed URLs, they're not entirely supported and they just don't really work in a consistent way, deterministic way on mobile devices. They more or less are a hack by which a website can invoke its own app, right? So the LinkedIn website can make a deep link call, which we often call it this, deep link, so that the LinkedIn app takes over from the website. So for user experience and user convenience. URL schemes and claimed URLs are not designed, as far as I can tell, and I've not been told otherwise, they're not designed where a website operated by one entity wants to invoke an app supplied by somebody else. In other words, not itself. You might imagine this might happen if let's say, e-commerce website, Walmart.com, let's say, wants to ask for a mobile driver's license coming from the state of Utah. Well, there are different vendors, and the custom URL schemes and URL handlers operate in ways that make it hard for the relying party to determinist, you know, to specify which apps should be invoked or could be invoked and selected by the user. There's many write-ups about this, which I can point you at if you wish. I probably do wish. I'll probably add a link in here for the published document. Also, another challenge for the ISO work group, and for all of us actually in the digital credentials world, is somehow we're thinking that users can actually do what we think they should do correctly all the time. In a world where there's an unlimited number of credentials, digital credentials, and a large number of credential wallets, it's just unrealistic. Now, I don't really know what the solution is for that, these are some of the challenges for the ISO work group that we're trying to figure out, trying to work through. And of course, there's no easy solutions. Otherwise, we'd be done by now. We're negotiating internally fairly intensely for the last 6 to 9 months on how we can standardize mobile driver's licenses on mobile devices and communication to MDL verifiers over the internet in ways that don't, you know, torpedo our own intentions and in ways that are not harmful to individuals and institutions. Like I mentioned on the previous slide, probably said too much about it, but the way mobile devices work makes it hard to find a path forward that doesn't introduce really crummy UX or introduce security vulnerabilities that we can predict and know of in advance, because, you know, that would be bad to standardize those things. So we're in deep discussion about how we're going to resolve this and how we're going to deal with it. Now, I will point out that I believe that other groups that are trying to do digital credentials of various types, formats, whatevers, on mobile devices have the same problems that must be solved. It's not unique to the ISO committee. Some groups are choosing to ignore it and let implementers do what they can. Some are trying to get to a place of safe, secure, non-harmful specification, but there is no easy path on this one. However, there will be, we hope, in the future. So some of you will be aware of the W3C Web Incubator Community Group, the YCG. They've started work, actively working on this identity credential browser API, previously known as the Mobile Document Request API. The idea is that, you know, the idea came from, was proposed by members of the ISO work group, the ISO committee, basically to define a mobile browser API that can be invoked to pass a credential request to a selection processor router sort of thing, so that the request can make it to the correct app, whichever one that is. The app can cause a credential to be selected, presumably by the user in some manner, and then the credential delivered back either through the API or through some other manner, like directly. I forgot the URL. Anyways, there's the discussions are very interesting right now because, you know, we've got major browser and OS vendors participating very strongly, which is very encouraging. So the Android, Chrome, and iOS folks and Microsoft's playing a deep role as well. They're talking this through and trying to discover. So what's the minimum? What's the minimum thing that needs to be standardized? But it's going to take a while. You know, as all of you know, formal publication of standards takes years. We're hopeful, generally as a community, that there can be some interim code available, implementations available that can be used. That will actually help solve some of the problems in advance of a formal publication of the standard. One difficulty for the ISO committee, of course, is that we have no influence directly and no control over what is developed in W3C. We can participate in that process. We can make suggestions and requests, but what comes out of another standards body is up to the other standards body. So we're giving as much guidance as we can, and we're participating as individuals as much as we can to basically look out for the interests of the 18013 Part 7 project. So we hopefully will have it working sooner rather than later. And again, you can't say this enough times. There's seemingly an infinite amount of complexity if we consider the many wallets, many credentials world, where any app can be a storage place for a credential or credentials, where a request may come in for data attributes from more than one credential or two full credentials or more. There's no simple or simplistic way to address the many, many, ecosystem. But at some point, presumably, the early implementations will come out dealing with single credentials and limited data sets so that these things can be used in the wild. And then as time goes on, with experience, we can start addressing the many wallets, many credentials scenarios. Okay, last slide. So I'm not in Paris, everyone else is, discussing the latest round of proposals for 18013.7. We're pushing as hard as we are able to get to a ballotable draft that goes out to the national bodies, national standards bodies. It's part of the ISO publication process. And I'm still mildly optimistic that we can publish in 2024 if we can get some agreement like this week about what should go in. But it might be in 2025. We'll see. The timeline is very fluid, but 2024 is what we're hoping to do. Some of you may have heard about NIST and DHS doing a U.S. National Cybersecurity Center of Excellence project for MDL implementations. I believe the call for interest has closed It was in fall 2023, and they're working through all the applications and submissions to structure several proof of concept projects, testing out different aspects of mobile driver's license. And then, you know, once ATL 13 Part 7 is published, we have more work to do as a committee to deal with all the other stuff. But one of the things that was removed from the scope is this person as credential subject binding or proving. So you can expect that to be very high on the candidate list for what to work on next. And this is me. So hopefully that was a reasonable overview. I'm happy to take any questions, any discussion from the group.
Adrian.
So, yes, maybe related to your last statement, understanding the complexity and obvious complexity of what you're describing, where do biometrics fit in? How is that impacting or not impacting the short-term stuff that you're talking about for 2024?
So it's not impacting. Biometrics is not in the scope of standardization for 18013 Part 5 or Part 7. The choice to use or not use biometrics for, let's say, unlocking the device or unlocking the app or authorizing presentation of an MDL, that usage is entirely up to an implementer to choose or to do or not do. And the extent to which the ISO committee was considering signaling this holder binding aspect, we were starting with basically a data structure to communicate that holder binding was achieved. We were not looking to standardize biometrics of any kind, but it's not out of the realm of possibility that we might mention biometrics down the road, but it's something we don't need to standardize because A, it's too big and it covers too many other areas of work. And we need to really focus on getting the driver's license over the internet first and making sure that we've got cautionary notes to implementers, implementation guidance on how implementers should be securing these apps and presentations.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Oh, come on, David Wade. I know you got a question for me. Come on. Ask me about encryption keys.
Actually, before David think of a question, I do have a question on your earlier slides. You mentioned that different states have different ideas on what driver license represent. Can you go in a little bit deeper into that? I found it interesting. Yeah.
I'm not sure I had it in this presentation, but yes, certainly. So what is a driver's license? There's a sort of quasi-philosophical question about if in the place you live, there must be an identification document issued by a government authority, what should it be? Right? Should it be something that is a national identification document, a regional identification document, a very limited scale identification document? Should it be a commonly held credential that stands in for a formal identification document? And the answer, of course, to all of the questions is yes. It depends. So in the U.S., and I've been talking with several of the driver motor vehicle administrator driving license offices over the years. And I was surprised to find that the opinion of what is a driver's license and how does it relate to an identification document, what is the opinion in the U.S.? And the opinion is any of the above. So some states view the driver's license as a permit to drive. Some view it as an identification document issued by the state. Some view it as the combination of both. And that the nature of the multi-part document concept exists in other places as well. So, for example, in Australia, Austroads, they really consider the MDL, mobile driver's license, to be of the permit to drive flavor, because they have a concept of identification documents for Australians. In the EU, there tend to be more national identification documents. So driver's licenses tend to be viewed as permits to drive. So I have no answer. I just have those little bits of information.
So how does that change and impact the MDL? How does these different requirements like impact the MDL like standards when you're trying to formulate them? Yeah.
So they don't. I mean, they don't really. So, the committee has, a strong understanding that personal information that is present on, a driver's license in the data model, could be used for identification and often will be used for identification purposes. It's sensitive. It's not to be released or aggregated. It needs protection in various ways. And that's kind of been the guiding concept. At implementation time, when companies and organizations build software, how they represent the MDL, will vary. But that is, specifically not controllable by a standards body that's talking about transmission protocols. It's just not something that we can specify. We can have guidance, we can have the security and privacy annex, we can have discussions, but what a developer does with software is kind of entirely up to the developer. We have no way to control what they do. We hope that they're well informed, so they do things that are not harmful.
Got it. Adrian.
So, what can you say about calling home as it relates to the stuff you're primarily talking about, the communication between, the holder agents and the verifier agents? Is the ISO process consider calling home absolutely a no-no, or is it part of what's under consideration? Or is it completely irrelevant and out of scope?
What do you mean by calling home? It means many things to everybody.
Okay. Well, what I mean simply is, when the cop pulls you over and asks for your driver's license, takes it to the car and looks it up in whatever database they look this stuff up in. Right? So when... that's all I mean. That's exactly what I mean.
Yeah.
Same thing as a border crossing.
Right. So law enforcement is authorized to do such things. So the whole concept of an authorized agent looking you up in some databases, that is explicitly authorized activity. There's nothing in the ISO standard that prohibits lawful use of whatever implementers create, period. That's my opinion on calling home in the lawfully authorized situation.
I guess my question was, is this something that the group actively tries to avoid in the
unauthorized situations?
In HTML 13.5 and HTML 13.7, we've explicitly defined protocols that do not require the verifier or the reader to connect with the issuer. So there are options available that just do not require any sort of communication at transaction time between the reader and the issuer.
But now, how about intermediaries other than the issuer?
We have no control over the internet or infrastructure. I mean, we specify a way, ways, especially in the, we do not require any live connection at transaction time between the reader and the issuer or their agents or intermediaries. There are ways of doing that with, obviously, with server retrieval. You're doing a live record retrieval. And some jurisdictions require that. Some number of implementations agree with the must be able to use it without having to confirm anything with the issuer directly at transaction time. And I'm trying to be careful with the language I'm using because I believe that the phrase calling home has lots of unintended.
No, your answer was reasonably clear. Are you saying that the assumption is that there is no network other than whatever is being used locally between the holder and the reader?
We don't make any assumptions on the ISO committee for that. That's entirely implementation dependent. What we do allow for 18.13.5 for the local transmission over the air is completely disconnected from the internet usage, right? So the so-called offline use, where the reader has no internet connectivity and the mobile device has no internet connectivity. And there are several modes that directly support that operation, so that there's no possibility of calling home in that scenario. Now, you know, my personal hope is that for the in-person presentation, implementers, you know, hopefully would tend to use that mode. But again, we can't control what implementers choose to do.
Right. We have one more question. And Suzanne, you're on the queue. Sorry, we're almost time.
Yes, very good. I just wanted to kind of go back to the state conversation and understand, you know, in scenarios where a state may have extended the life of a valid license maybe 6 months past expiration. This happened a lot during COVID. Maybe not all states experienced this, but your driver's license could indeed be expired for upwards of 6 months before it was considered expired. And so as we think so much about credentials and whether they're valid and whether or not they're inside their time frame, I'm just curious how these scenarios come up where states or other areas may need to extend the life of a particular credential due to an event that doesn't necessarily mean reissuing the credential.
Yeah, so one of the things that is sort of embedded in the whole operational mode for MDOCs and other credentials is this idea of refresh. So there are mechanisms that you could use to refresh a driver's license without reissuing it, where reissuance would mean, you know, the full-on go to the driver's office, do the picture, do the dance, all that stuff. So there are mechanisms that permit refresh of driver's licenses. Now, how each state and their implementers chose to do this thing of extension beyond the original date, I have no direct knowledge. I think there's a handful of companies that actually have the licenses in the field, and really what we're talking about there is in the realm of changing the acceptance policy of verifiers. So the organizations that operate readers, they have the ultimate choice about what to accept and what to believe from the driver's license transaction. So if a verifier says that their local policy is the credential must not be expired, period, then they'll reject it. If the verifier says, oh, wait a minute, we will accept an MDL that has been expired for 6 months because of the following reasons, then they'll accept it. But in the technical standard, there's nothing that talks about any of that.
Cool. Thanks. Well, thank you, Andrew. We're at time, but thank you for a great presentation and a great discussion. All right, so I think this concludes today's CCG meeting. Again, like next 2 weeks, we'll be off. We won't have CCG meetings for the next 2 weeks, and we'll resume on Tuesday, January 2nd. All right, have a good one, and happy holidays. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone.